the summer has seen record-setting jackpot numbers. Last week, a winning ticket in Florida won the entire $1.5 billion prize from Mega Millions. That comes less than a month after a California lotto player won the billion-dollar Powerball jackpot. Those are two of the largest jackpots in the history of the modern American lottery, which goes back to the 1960s. Here's a New York lotto ad from the 1980s.
I'd keep my job, but I'd hire somebody to do it for me.
I'd trade the BMT for a BMW.
I'd still fight fires, but only on my barbecue.
I'd be a well-fed artist instead of a starving one.
I'd buy some used furniture at Sotheby's.
Tonight, someone could win millions of dollars.
I'd finally put my money where my mouth is.
New York Lotto. All you need is a dollar and a dream.
Over the past 60 years, the lottery has become an icon of American culture, representing greed and excess and the dream of financial freedom. Our guest today traces this history in his latest book, and we want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. Do you play the lottery? Have the big jackpots of the past few years influenced your decision to play or not? What are your thoughts on government-sponsored lotteries in the first place? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Jonathan D. Cohen is the Senior Program Officer at the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. His latest book is called For a Dollar and a Dream, State Lotteries in Modern America. John, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks, Robin. Just for the record, I did not win either of those billion-dollar jackpots you mentioned, which is why I'm here.
Well, I won't ask you for a big contribution to public radio then today, John.
not as big. That's right.
Now, before we dig into the history, let's start with these ripped from the headline stories, these 10-digit billion-dollar jackpots, two in a summer. What has led to this sort of jackpot creep over the last few years?
So the big factor is that around 2016, 2017, and even a little bit after, multi-state lottery associations, which run Powerball, which run Mega Millions, have changed the odds. They've sort of juiced the stats, and the games are now just ever so slightly harder to win. You know, the pool of numbers you have to pick from is bigger, so people are less likely to pick the winning numbers, so the jackpots are more likely to roll over, and then eventually you're more prone to get bigger and bigger prizes over time.
You write that there can be a kind of jackpot fatigue where once upon a time, wow, $100 million jackpot, I want to get in on that. Oh, it's just $100 million. Now people are looking for $200 and so on. Pretty soon, billion-dollar jackpots may be passe and unexciting.
I think so. In that clip that you played at the top, all you need is a dollar and a dream New York ad. At the time, people would go crazy for a $50 million jackpot. And until 2019, Powerball and Mega Millions started at 40 million. And now it's been routine to hit $1 billion since about 2016. It hit $2 billion last year or earlier this year. I think pretty soon $1 billion is going to become routine, and it's going to be 1.5, 2, maybe even more to get people out of bed and buy their lottery tickets.
As you write in For a Dollar and a Dream, John, various forms of lotteries have been with us since, well, the Old Testament and then colonial America. But you trace the origins of the modern lottery here in America to the 1960s. What was driving this in the first few, Eastern Seaboard states that jumped on this lottery bandwagon?
That's right. New Hampshire was the lottery pioneer. And in my telling, in the 1960s, states had this acute need for government revenue, but a populace, a public that was not willing to vote in more taxes. And there are very, very few options for a state government that wants to raise money, but is unwilling or unable to increase taxes other than to turn to a mechanism like gambling. And then once New Hampshire goes and then New York, there are lots of X factors to explain how it goes from there. But they really sort of broke down a 100-year wall that had sort of stood in the way of Americans and their favorite legalized gambling pastime.
And I'm shortcutting a lot of the history here, but there was a lot of hope, you write, in states, one state after another, as they picked up the lottery as to what a bounty this was going to be for their budgets. A lot of disappointment. And yet it kept spreading like wildfire. What was going on?
And yet they're still passing new forms of sports gambling, but we can get to that in a minute. In my accounting, the way I see it is, you know, we have this sense, this belief that lottery players are irrational and maybe stupid and they don't understand probability. And yet all these voters and policymakers who enact gambling have this same wishful, irrational, maybe even stupid belief that a lottery is going to solve their state's financial problems. So I think we're all we're all prone to sort of seeing what we want to see and hoping against hope that gambling is going to work out for us. And the way I phrase it in the book is that these states have bet on betting as a single-handed solution to their state's budgetary problems.
Talking about lotteries with Jonathan Cohen. His latest book is called For a Dollar and a Dream, State Lotteries in Modern America, looking at the rise, the growth, the persistence of the modern lottery and these new billion-dollar jackpots. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you play the lottery? Do you know the odds are against you, but you like to have that that dollar and a dream, as he says in his title? What do you think about lotteries as public policy? Should states rely on them for part of their budget? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Now, John, you talked to some low-income people who play the lottery. You didn't find them, I think, to be stupid or irrational. What kind of things did you find out from people who kept playing the lottery, even though they knew the odds were against them?
Yeah, and this is something that I think is really important. It's something that before I engaged in this project, you know, before I went to 20 plus states and talked to lottery players and sort of convenience stores, that I never would have thought of. A big one is that these lottery players, the value they get even from a losing ticket. And so it's easy to say, oh, you lost, so you just wasted your money. You don't know how probability works. But what a ticket provides, especially for a big game like Powerball or Mega Millions, is a chance to dream. A couple days, a couple hours, maybe just a couple minutes, this opportunity to imagine what it would be like to win the lottery. You know, I know tons of people who imagine winning the lottery who never buy tickets, but some people need that real skin in the game to really feel like they have a shot. And so I think that's a big part of the story that people who don't play the lottery won't understand. And it's hard to sort of wrap your mind around unless you've sort of taken the lottery plunge for yourself.
And one thing that struck me, John, was some of the people you talk to, you make the point that they can't imagine another path from where they are to being wealthy or maybe even to being financially stable in the first place. The lottery seems like maybe their best bet.
That's right. And I think it's totally understandable that if someone, whether they're reasoning correctly or not, but if someone reasons that they don't have a chance through the traditional economy, through their work, for example, or maybe they've achieved financial stability but don't have a way to get rich, can we blame them for taking a shot, however improbable, however long the odds? It's really, really understandable to me, at least, why they'd be willing to put down a few dollars, in some cases a couple more than a few dollars, but why they'd be willing to sort of take a bet on this last chance at a better life.
Let's bring on a caller. Bruce is with us in Two Harbors, Minnesota. Bruce, hi.
Hello there. Say, I understand about the likelihood of me winning it, but on the other hand, then I say to myself, when the mega billions comes up, I think, well, you know, I could have spent a couple of bucks at least. My hat is not even in the ring. So hoping against hope, as you said, you know, what the heck? I'm not going to win if I don't put my hat in the ring.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, can I ask, do you play only when we get these, you know, headline jackpot numbers? Do you play regularly? If I could ask about your lottery habit.
You know, it's really, mine is haphazard, and that is, I'm not a scratch off person, but you know, now and then, yes, when they start saying, you know, a gazillion dollars, I think, well, what the heck, you know, what the heck? So
I gotcha, Bruce. Thanks a lot for the call. And John, Bruce is not alone. You write that this is a pretty common pattern. You've got the regular lottery customers. Then you've got lots of Bruces in the world who get in as those numbers start to, well, get covered by us in the media.
That's right. So roughly 1 in 8 Americans buys a lottery ticket once a week, but 50% do once a year. And a lot of those people are people like Bruce who don't even think about the lottery until it gets in the media, until they see the billboard that has $1 billion and they say, oh, and I think to quote Bruce, oh, what the heck, I'll put down $2, $10, and I'll just give it a try. And all of a sudden, those dollars from lots and lots of people in all corners of the country add up, and that's what creates the bigger and bigger jackpots.
Thanks a lot for that call. Jonathan D. Cohen is with us. He's the author of the book For a Dollar and a Dream, State Lotteries in Modern America. We're looking at the rise of lotteries across the country and the billion-dollar payouts that have grabbed headlines lately. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you or anyone you know won the lottery, whether it's a $20 scratch-off or a big prize of some sort? When you see a billion-dollar jackpot, even if you're not a regular lottery customer, do you think, yeah, maybe I'll buy a ticket or two, hope for the best? Do you have questions for our guest about the history of lotteries, how they work as public policy, as part of a state budget? You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about lotteries and why we're seeing more and more big money jackpot prizes topping $1 billion. Jonathan D. Cohen stays with us, author of For a Dollar and a Dream, State Lotteries in Modern America. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your experiences. If you play or have played lotteries, love to hear from you. What questions do you have about how they got so big in the United States? What do you think of them? Should states be participating in them in the first place? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Ryan is with us in Prairie du Chien. Ryan, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What'd you want to bring up?
I don't play the lotteries. I do teach history, and I just kind of find it kind of funny in a peculiar way how in the 80s they took down all those guys in the mafia who controlled all these lotteries for all those years and then basically took over their racket.
Ryan, thanks for the call and the story you tell in your book. John, yeah, lotteries were looked at as a replacement and maybe tapping into the market created by existing illegal numbers rackets.
That's right. And you alluded at the top to the fact that lotteries started in the Northeast. And that's because those were the states, not New Hampshire, but New York, New Jersey, Illinois, and others, Maryland. Those were the states with the largest illegal betting market in a game known as numbers or policy, and you know, an illegal daily lottery that was especially popular in urban African-American communities. And the state reasoned, to put it bluntly, that if all these people are going to gamble, the state might as well make money off of it. And yeah, exactly as Ryan said, we've sort of replaced what was once an illegal pastime with now a tax providing social good in the mind of lottery commissions.
Thanks a lot for that call, Ryan, at 800-642-1234. John, you trace a history where, you know, initially lotteries are sold as this is going to save the state budget, and then this is going to save the state's education budget, and then this is going to provide scholarships to some lucky students. The expectation game keeps going down and down for what lotteries are actually going to do for state budgets.
That's right. And they go down and they get more realistic, but they still are painted and are couched in this super hyperbolic language of, oh, this is going to make all the difference, or this is going to be the moneymaker that, you know, saves our state in one way or another. I guess it's not, it's hard for a politician to get up there and say, this is going to be an amazing program. It's going to raise 1.7% of our tax revenue. That's not as good of a sell, I guess. So they have to sort of couch it in this really, beautiful, massive language that emphasizes all the good that we're going to get out of gambling.
And with these billion-plus payouts, clearly these lotteries are big money, plus the scratch-off ones. How much of an economic impact do they make for states now?
Yeah, so nationwide, Americans spent $98 billion on lottery tickets last year. Roughly 28% of that money went to the designated beneficiaries, which vary state by state, which $28 billion sounds like a lot of money. But when you think about the size of all 45 lottery states and the size of all their state budgets, it comes out to about 1%, maybe 2% of total state income.
You mentioned sports betting earlier in the year. A lot of states have gone in with some forms of legalized casino gambling. Were lotteries in some ways a gateway drug for states saying, hey, we can tap into the market for gambling?
Yes, absolutely. So as the last caller mentioned, we had this all this illegal gambling, which sort of helped normalize the lottery, and the lottery helped normalize other sorts of gambling. So just to take the example of the Midwest, horse race gambling and bingo comes first, but really it's the lottery that sort of breaks things open. And soon after we get the lottery, there's riverboat casinos in Iowa and Illinois, casinos in downtown Detroit. Tribal gaming becomes legalized in the late 80s. This is all sort of right on the heels, right after states get into the lottery business, is when they sort of go all in, pun intended, on the gambling economy.
Talking to John Cohen, author of the book, For a Dollar and a Dream, State Lotteries in Modern America, looking at the rise of lotteries and the billion-dollar payoffs over the last month or so. Still time for you to join in with your experiences or questions at 800-642-1234. John, throughout the book, you try to bust a few myths along the way. One is, and I've seen stories like this all the time, you win the lottery, hey, it's not so great. You end up broke. You end up miserable. You say maybe there's a few cases, mostly a myth, though.
Absolutely a myth. It's one of my favorite sort of myths to bust for people. And it's exactly as you said, where there are a couple of examples, and I know all of their names because it's the same examples that get trotted out every single time. There are a couple of examples from the last 30 years or so of lottery millionaires who lost it all. And that's real. But the vast, vast majority of lottery winners are never heard from again because they're living on some island somewhere in luxury and with security up the wazoo. There are studies from the United States, from Florida and Ohio, from Taiwan, from Germany, from the UK, from Sweden, across the world, lottery winners in general are happier, healthier, and wealthier than the rest of us. And this is true in the United States too. Again, there are a couple examples that grab headlines, but the vast, vast majority of lottery winners do a lot better than everybody else.
This is a little more subtle. Another myth you say is the idea that, okay, it's natural for people to want to gamble. People are going to want to gamble. They're going to do it one way or another illegally. So we might as well give them some kind of legal outlet. You make the case that it doesn't have to be that way, I think.
That's right. And this is the when I say that, spoiler alert, that I think, it's time to get rid of the lottery or change it substantially. People will say, oh, but isn't gambling just something people will always want to do in some form? And that's true. But what we have now, $100 billion industry is only possible because of the cooperation of state governments and massive corporations, that sell lottery tickets, that print lottery tickets. And if the lottery were to be made illegal, if it was just a little less accessible, let's say, than it is now, there is no way that 1 in 8 Americans would buy a ticket. And Bruce, our caller earlier, who every once in a while he buys a ticket, he wouldn't do so if it was illegal, I'm guessing. He's only able to do so because it's authorized by the state. It's sold at his convenience store. It's quick and it's easy. And if it was illegal or if it didn't have the endorsement of state and major corporations, I think we'd have a lot less gambling, and that would do a lot of civic good.
Let's bring on one more caller. Jack is with us in Eagle River. Jack, hi.
Hi, I have essentially two questions. And by the way, I read your book. I enjoyed it greatly, and I think I am of the same opinion. My basic question is this. I'm an old enough guy to remember the local bookie in my neighborhood in Milwaukee. And why is it that he could go to jail for running, doing bookmaking because gambling was illegal and the state can do it and we all love it, supposedly? Then the second part of the question is, I'm old. So I remember that there was things like the Irish sweepstakes, and I watched movies like The Treasure of Sierra Madre. It always seemed like it was third world countries or countries that were in economic disarray that had great lottery tickets, and everybody hoped somebody would get a winning lottery ticket. But it wasn't productive societies that ran lotteries. It was those that were marginal. Those are my two comments.
Jack, thanks for the call. John.
Well, Jack, first of all, thanks and foremost for reading the book. I'm glad you liked it. I'll say, first of all, with regard to sports gambling, it's true. The state, it's very similar to what they did in the African-American community by, taking the daily lottery game and making it a legal enterprise. Same thing now. They're taking the illegal bookies, making them a legal enterprise. Same as what they did with marijuana legalization, right? What was once in many states, what was once illegal is now, state sanctioned and in fact a tax raising activity. And it's just sort of the times change and the laws change and, even though there are probably still people in jail who were for being bookies many years ago or for selling weed. That's sort of unfortunately the way culture and laws evolve. On the second point, it's a great observation, and there actually is a long history in the United States of illegal lotteries from the 19th century, especially that would move offshore to avoid regulation. So there was a big illegal lottery in Louisiana in the 1890s that moved to Cuba. There was another lottery that moved to Honduras. So yes, I think there is an association of lotteries with economies that do not provide opportunity elsewhere in other forms. And maybe that says a lot about the United States and how popular the lottery is here too, that maybe we aren't providing quite as much opportunity for people as we think we are.
Jack, thanks for the call. Just our last half a minute. John, you said you'd be in favor of maybe ending or significantly altering the lottery. Do you feel like you're pushing against the tide here?
Yes, I suffer no illusion that it's going to happen anytime soon, but I do think there are a lot of things that even individual states can do that are pretty realistic and that have a lot of historical precedent that they could do to make the lottery more fair and work better for people. You know, things like regulating their lottery advertising or limiting the size of jackpots. That would make a big difference and would make the lottery a little bit less appealing in a way that frankly wouldn't even harm the bottom line that much, but would prevent people with gambling problems, for example, from losing too much money on the games.
John, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks, Rob, and good luck.
That's Jonathan D. Cohen from the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. We talked about his book, For a Dollar and a Dream, State Lotteries in Modern America, and the trend of skyrocketing jackpots lately.